All right, here's what we have for you. We learned, by the way, only about 45 minutes, maybe at most an hour ago, that Mr. Putin and Mr. Trump have been engaging in a telephone call. We don't have the details of what they've been discussing, but obviously, because of everything else that's going on right now, given what the situation is in Ukraine, we think it's going to be important. If we get any information at all, we're going to share it with you right here as it happens. Also, a new U.S. intel report has found that the news reports about the Russia interference in Trump's election was an absolute fabrication. This is a brand new report that's just come out. Who was behind it all? Two men at the highest levels of the U.S. government. I'll tell you who they are. Also, things are not looking good for Volodymyr Zelensky as more Ukrainians, both inside and outside of the country, are now calling for his head. One is even accusing him of genocide. And, you know, we hear a lot these days about the CIA, the Mossad, and the horrible things that sometimes they've done in the past. But you know who may be just as bad? You know who may actually be worse? The UK's MI6. This is the Sanchez effect. Let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. Mark Twain once famously wrote, I love this line, that in the time it takes the truth to tie its shoes, a lie will go all the way around the world. So true. And so it is with what we know now about that lie that was meant on purpose to destroy the presidency of Donald Trump. See, there's a new report out, and according to this new investigation and subsequent report, these two men that you see right here who are most responsible for creating and spreading that lie. That is former President Barack Obama, former CIA Director John Brennan. In fact, the guy now running the CIA is saying these two guys created and ran a sophisticated operation to convince Americans, to make them think, and it worked, that Donald Trump could not be trusted.
This was Obama, Comey, Clapper, and Brennan deciding we're going to screw Trump. They stamped it as Russian collusion and then classified it so nobody could see it. It put the seal of approval of the intelligence community that Russia was helping Trump and that the Steele dossier was the scandal of our lifetime. It ate up the first 2 years of his presidency.
It certainly did. And by the way, Mr. Trump was never able to really overcome that accusation. And to a large extent, neither did Russia, even though Russia didn't do anything wrong. It was fake. It was a lie, especially when you compare it to the election interferences perpetrated by the West in other countries in the past, including Russia. But Trump's attackers did not stop there. They then ate up the next 2 years of Mr. Trump's presidency with another rabbit hole accusation. And this time it was about whether Mr. Trump tried to withhold weapons from Zelensky in Ukraine. A story that may have been worth a day or two in the news, but look at it. It just blew up, right? Played out for almost 2 years and even led to impeachment proceedings. Zelensky could have come to Trump's aid during that time, but he didn't. In fact, he kind of played along with the narrative, didn't he? See, the irony of that is that now, what, 5 years later, Trump's actions are having a negative effect on Zelensky. Yesterday, a more experienced Trump sent a message to Zelensky, and here's the message. The U.S. is canceling weapons to Ukraine. And this time, it didn't happen during a secretly recorded conversation that could be used against Mr. Trump. No, no. This time, it was done out in the open and reported in every major newspaper around the world. Why? Well, because as Vice President J.D. Vance has now pointed out, sending the U.S.'s best weapons, its most sophisticated weapons, to Ukraine does not fit the promise of America first.
I really don't care what President Zelensky says about me or anybody else, but he showed a clear unwillingness to engage in the peace process that President Trump has said is the policy of the American people and of their president. That's the real breakdown, is I think Zelensky wasn't yet there, and I think, frankly, now still isn't there.
So what do we have now? You know what we have? We have a more confident White House with a new policy that no longer embraces Zelensky's government just because they have to. And it may also be causing big problems for Zelensky internally, as Ukrainians both inside and outside of the country are now calling for his ouster because of what they see going on. Former member of the parliament, a gentleman named Artem Dmytryk, is going as far as accusing Zelensky. Listen to this. He's accusing him of genocide.
He stole not only money and lives from the country. He stole a generation, stole children, stole hope. While he is building a regime for himself, our children are building their lives in other countries. Ukraine is becoming depopulated. This is not migration. This is a terrible tragedy, part of the genocide.
I got to tell you something, and I think this is important as I think about it. There are lessons to be learned from the manipulation of Donald Trump. And it has to do with just how shrewd some of these people are. People in the administrative state, the deep state, whatever the hell you want to call it, it's become so good at controlling the entities that most of us always believed were truly in charge. You elect the president, you think the president's in charge. You elect a congressman, you think he's in charge. No. And the people that are being manipulated are not just the White House or the Congress or even the president of the United States himself that can get ruled by these people. Nor is it just a U.S. problem. It happens all over the world. In fact, one of the perpetrators of deception and manipulation resides in London. It's called MI6. Yes, Great Britain, as a nation, seems smaller these days, right? Less important by each every day. But their intelligence operations, they still behave as if they rule the world. Maybe they think they do. And now we have the president of Iran, by the way, announcing that he's no longer going to cooperate with the Atomic Energy Agency, even though they have always worked with this agency to ensure that they're not building nuclear weapons.
Iran's president, Masoud Pezeshkian, has announced the law suspending the country's cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency. Cooperation will remain suspended until and unless Tehran receives guarantees for the safety of its nuclear sites and scientists.
So let me put this together for you. Why is the president of Iran? Why am I talking about the president of Iran? And why is he pulling away from the IAEA, right? The International Atomic Energy Agency. Here's why. Because he believes the nuclear agency has been compromised. And there's every reason to believe that he might be right. See, the IAEA is supposed to act like a referee in a football game, right? You expect whether you're in a football game or a basketball game or a boxing match that the referee is going to be neutral. He's not pulling for this side or that side. He's neutral, right? Well, according to new reporting by the Gray Zone, the agency has not been neutral when it comes to Iran. Why? Because it was infiltrated by the MI6, who were able to make it appear as if Iran was doing something that it wasn't, which then caused Israel and other Western nations to go after them. So, look, here's the question that I'm left with as I'm reading this, right? If MI6 is willing to infiltrate the agency that is supposed to keep us all safe from nuclear bombs, what else are they willing to do? Think about it. Are they willing to attack Russia's nuclear plane fleet and make it look like Ukraine did it with some cheap little drones they bought? Are they willing to help assassinate Iranian scientists and their families and make it look like, well, no, it was the Mossad? How about the Crimean Bridge? It's been attacked several times while commuters were using it to try and get back and forth from work, families. These are questions that are being asked more and more these days. And it has to do with revelations about MI6 that continue to be revealed. So here is what we're going to do. When we come back, I'm going to have a conversation because I want to know more about this investigation. And I'm going to be talking to Gray Zone investigative journalist Kit Clarenberg, who is the author of the story that I just told you about, revealing the MI6's connection to Iran. Stay right there. This is going to get good, and we're going to be right back. So whenever the two most powerful men in the world, or certainly two of the most powerful men in the world, have conversations, we want to know. We learned just a little while ago that Mr. Trump and Mr. Putin were having a conversation. Now, I should tell you, we don't know what they discussed. And they've been having a lot of regular conversations that we've been reporting on, so it may not be the most important thing in the world. But we're going to be monitoring it. We usually get a report. Sometimes, if it happens during this newscast, then I will bring it to you right away. So just so you know that the two men had a discussion. All right, now back to the story that we've been covering. Kit Clarenberg is a British whistleblower and investigative journalist. He writes for The Gray Zone. I have told you here on this show on many occasions that I think The Gray Zone is doing some of the best reporting of our time. Kit is good enough to join us now to talk about what he has uncovered. And we want to thank him for being with us. And let's get right to it. Kit, you basically have found that there is a connection between the Nuclear Energy Agency and Iran that was meant to make Iran look bad. Take us through it.
Okay, sure. I mean, it depends how early you want to go into this. But effectively, at the Gray Zone, we came across the CV of the professional resume of an individual called Nicholas Langman. He is a MI6 journeyman. Uh-huh. He has been burned publicly twice as an MI6 operative. One might think this would lead to his firing, but no, he seems to have failed upwards. And one of the roles that he failed upwards into was running Britain's counter-proliferation centre between 2010 and 2012. Hmm. In his official CV, he takes credit for sanctions, international sanctions levied against Iran between 2010 and 2012. Now, this is a period where the US, the UN, and the EU cut Iran out of the SWIFT banking network, which caused mass destruction to Iran's economy during this period. It was the foundation of the 2015 nuclear agreement with Obama. His purpose very much seems to have been to generate false intelligence in the manner of Iraq's alleged WMD capability to justify harsh actions being taken against the Islamic Republic.
Let me just stop you for a minute, because I'd like to get you to the point that I read in your story that soon after that, all of a sudden, there was all this negative attention being thrown at Iran. And obviously, it was being created falsely by Nicholas Langman and whatever the hell it is that he was doing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it explicitly states in his leaked CV, which we included in our piece, that he was in charge of pressurizing Iran to end its non-existent nuclear program. Now, again, as I say, this tallies with numerous countries and numerous intergovernmental organizations taking harsh punitive measures against Iran over its alleged nuclear program, which in 2006, the U.S. Intelligence Committee ruled was not ongoing, which had been dumped. This was an assessment allegedly shared by Mossad for many, many years. The obvious questions arise as to whether this task of constructing or concocting false intelligence against Iran was outsourced to MI6. Again, as
right. You're exactly what I was just thinking. You're like going there. Let me set it up for you a little bit, if I can. So my question as you were taking me through this was, okay, so why would MI6 do this? Why wouldn't the Mossad do this? This sounds like a perfect plot or plan for Israel, not the Brits. So why are the Brits doing this? That was going to be my question for you. Sorry for interrupting you.
Okay. No. I mean, it's my pleasure to be interrupted by you, Rick. Feel free. But no, I mean, in general, MI6 is well known for going a lot further than other intelligence agencies are willing to go to. They do so without any oversight whatsoever. It has been reported in the British media that billions are being spent on GCHQ, MI5 and MI6 operations without any oversight whatsoever. So they can basically do what they want. And in this context, his aforementioned CV references the fact that that Langman was responsible for getting Middle Eastern intelligence agencies and US intelligence agencies on board with the idea that Iran was developing nuclear weapons. Now, Middle Eastern intelligence agencies, this is a obvious euphemism for Mossad, okay? You know, the same story played out in Iraq, and Scott Ritter has testified to this. In the late 90s, there was a secret program called Operation Mass Appeal, where MI6 fed false intelligence into journalists on their payroll in foreign media, which was then recycled and picked up by Western leaders as proof that Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction that could be deployed within 45 minutes. Now, the level of penetration described in this CV is highly intensive. And also, as well, you've got to bear in mind that given Benjamin Netanyahu has at pretty much annual intervals for the past few decades claimed that Iran is within weeks of securing nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
Well, if it comes from a third party source like MI6, that lends it a veil of credibility. You know, it's not the Israelis saying this. It's not the CIA saying this. It's the British.
By the way, there's been a bunch of reports recently with what happened recently with Iran, where it looked like the Atomic Energy Agency may have been complicit in being used and allowing themselves to be used. In this particular case that you investigated, did they know or were they complicit in any way in these fabrications or lies that were being made up?
Well, I mean, again, it's difficult to tell, but it is clear based on leaks from Iran's intelligence ministry that Rafael Grossi, the head of the IAEA, was passing information to the Israelis. This included the names of nuclear scientists in Iran who were subsequently assassinated. So, what a deadly web we weave when we practice to deceive. There's also another point to bear in mind, which is that the Islamic Revolution in the 1970s, its source was a coup carried out in the early 1950s by the CIA and MI6. This was achieved by MI6 lying and deceiving the CIA into thinking that they had a rock solid, foolproof plan, which just needed American wealth and muscle to succeed. And then that got rid of Mohammad Mossadegh, the elected leader of Iran. And then we have 25 years of the Shah ruling with an iron fist with British trained security services. And that, you know, that was the seeds that led to the Islamic Revolution.
I get a sense as I'm listening to you, and I'm drawing this picture in my mind, and you tell me if I'm full of crap or not, but I'm wondering, it almost seems like the MI6, the Mossad, and the CIA work together, and they assign each other stuff so that they can get some sense of clearance in terms of what people may suspect. People think it was the CIA. No, it was the Mossad. People think it was the Mossad. No, it was MI6. Do you have a sense that happens, that they do that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, 100%. I mean, it's like, I mean, it's a perfect, like, I mean, you know, intelligence agencies, that they love plausible deniability, right?
Right.
So you can blame another intelligence agency for your own failings. There was, in 2004, there was a U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee report mm-hmm. into the intelligence failures that led to the war in Iraq. There is a very striking passage within it which states that due to a reliance by the CIA on third-party reporting and foreign reporting, this opened U.S. foreign policy up to exploitation by interested foreign actors. This is a veiled reference to MI6 and how they were the ones who led the charge on fabricating or sourcing false intelligence about Iraq's WMD program. You know, the infamous claim that Saddam Hussein could deploy chemical and biological weapons within 45 minutes, which was iterated by George W. Bush, which was iterated by Dick Cheney.
George Tenet, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, that came from the British. So, I mean, there is a chicken and egg aspect to this, where it's like, well, okay, so who's lying first?
Right. I'm thinking now about all these things that I've been seeing here in Russia. You know, they I don't know, I'm sure you follow the news. They bombed railroads when trains were going over it. They blew up planes that had to be out in the open by treaty, because they were part of a nuclear program. They blew up a bridge in Crimea. These are all things that don't make any sense in terms of a war, and they were kind of sneaky, and a lot of people in Russia are really angry about this kind of stuff. And I talked to some of my own sources about these kinds of things, and I asked, and they mentioned to me, that's not the work of the CIA, that's the work of MI6. And I thought, really? I never thought of the MI6 as being that geopolitically involved in all things outside of just maybe perhaps Europe, for example. But do you think they're quite capable of doing that kind of thing?
Oh, absolutely. And I think in a bitter irony, I have, since the very start of the proxy war in Ukraine, been reporting on how Britain is leading this effort. I've caught a lot of flack. Because people typically perceive MI6 as a tool of the CIA or wedged under the agency's heel. Huh. No, they go into business for themselves all the time. Now, I mean, you mentioned the attack on Kerch Bridge. That was in October 22, right?
Correct, yeah.
Right, so within hours of that attack happening, and as we at the Grey Zone revealed, it was plotted by the British, this strike. The mastermind of the attack, this guy called Chris Donnelly, who's like this long-time British military intelligence operative and also a NATO advisor. We have leaked conversations with senior British military officials in which he's talking about how the Biden administration's reluctance to get fully involved in the proxy war needs to be countered at all costs immediately. And it's like, yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned the drone strikes on Russian strategic nuclear bombers. The British were quite clearly behind this, and the purpose was to escalate this even further, because, you know, as a vassal of the US, who is completely dependent on Washington's wealth and muscle to maintain their international relevance, what wouldn't you do to keep them invested in conflicts you yourself have fomented?
Yeah, but, you know, I got to tell you, man, I crossed that bridge, the Kerch Bridge that you're just talking about. That's a bridge meant for civilians. Those are people. Those are families on that bridge. I mean, thank God it didn't actually crumble and go to the ground, and what they intended to have happen, thank God, didn't happen, just because of the grace of God and, I guess, good concrete. But could you imagine? I mean, the Great Britain, for all that we hear about what a wonderful country and the history of it and the Queen and everything else, they're out killing civilians in a war that they shouldn't even be involved in? That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my experience of living overseas is that people perceive Britain as being like Harry Potter, or like you know. But it's like, but the reality is that like the British have always been more willing than others to go way further and engage in all sorts of escalatory incendiary actions, which other intelligence agencies wouldn't want anything to do with. Now, they've also been dubbed by people involved in Operation Gladio, which was this Cold War effort to maintain fascist paramilitary groups across Europe, as the meanest. Like they are known for their brutality. It's quite an effective psyop that people think of them as these very prim and proper and polite.
Not, you know, it's funny. My wife and I, we honeymooned at Stratford-upon-Avon, and I thought they were the most
glorious. Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the greatest place in the world. I love the Brits. I did some stuff for the BBC, and I always thought they were like beyond reproach. My thoughts lately, I've spoken with, Tucker Carlson, who has the same opinion. Last night I was talking to Colonel McGregor, who has the same opinion. There's a real consensus forming now amongst people whose eyes are being open to the fact that the British have been responsible for a lot of the really bad, crappy, horrible, mean stuff that has been taking place in the world. And it's quite a discovery for those of us who were kind of naive, I guess, including myself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's like what you've got to bear in mind is that, like, I mean, for example, the Maidan coup in Ukraine in February and March 2014.
Yeah.
This was obviously orchestrated by the National Endowment for Democracy, which is an avowed CIA cutout. But it occurred at a time when the Obama administration was dedicated to an Asia pivot. Right.
Yeah.
And you also had the Obama doctrine where Barack Obama said Ukraine is not a core interest of the US, but it is of Russia. Hence, we won't send, at least formally, lethal aid to Azov and all these other fascist paramilitary groups on the ground. At the same time, you have the aforementioned Chris Donnelly openly talking about how Britain should take a lead on training these paramilitary groups, and this would be a way of diverting the Asia pivot and refocusing the US on Europe and the Middle East.
Huh.
And who is the ultimate beneficiary of that? It's the British.
Were they involved with Victoria Nuland on this scheme to try and foment a coup in Ukraine?
Yes, absolutely. Another aspect of this, in respect to Victoria Nuland, she was the one who picked, there's that infamous leaked phone call where she says F the EU and she like names the fascists who are going to form Ukraine's interim government.
Right.
At the same time, you have British military and intelligence operatives on the ground coordinating with the post-coup government. They were doing what the US formally would not do.
Mm. Yeah, and still are, some would argue. Before I let you go,
yes.
This guy, Nicholas Langman, that you write so well about, what's his story now? I mean, and by the way, why did he pound his chest about this thing? And aren't spies supposed to quietly live the rest of their lives somewhere where nobody knows who the hell they are? They even change their names? Why is this guy so public?
Well, I mean, as I say, he's been burned twice publicly as a MI6 officer, which, you know, you would think was grounds for firing or being like pensioned off to a field somewhere. But no, I mean, he seems to have failed upwards. He seems to have been given significant roles in fomenting international hysteria around Iran's, you know, non-existent nuclear program. And this dates back to 2006 when he was recalled from Greece for being involved in the torture of Pakistani guest workers. So it's like, I mean, these people operate in a climate of like total impunity.
Nicholas Langman. What a fascinating.
If only you and I, Rick, could get away with like rank journalistic malpractice and be promoted.
No, I've been fired like 5 or 6 times already, and it's always it's always been for doing something that the editors didn't like. But then most people would say, yeah, but you reported the truth. Yeah, but some truths are not allowed to be reported, as you well know, because you work at the Gray Zone, which is one of the few places in the world where you can find the truth. And nobody, I think, gets fired for telling it.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the Gray Zone, no, but I mean, elsewhere in media, and you know, absolutely. I think that it is... it's marvelous that people such as yourself, who dare stand on the seemingly uncontroversial point of like actually telling the truth, can still get a platform anywhere. Because I mean, the media situation now across the West, I've never seen anything like it in my lifetime.
You're absolutely 100% spot on. I have never seen anything like it. It's gotten to the point where literally it is a PR and marketing department for the State Department. That's crazy.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, and also as well, it's on the subject of Langman's involvement in this. I mean, like, you got to bear in mind that he was openly named by the Greek media as being involved in torture of terror suspects who were completely innocent. The entire British media didn't report on this. They refused to name him at direct government order, right?
Well, what do you think? The BBC is going to do a report that they didn't come from their bosses at MI6?
Yeah. I mean, what one might think that they would, but no. I mean, it's completely crazy, and the space for dissenting opinions is ever lessening, and this is by design. So let's keep doing this for as long as we can. Yeah. Hopefully, it's longer than we expect.
It is what it is. By the way, I mean, the thing I said about the possible connection between MI6 and the BBC is something which has been established, I should say, and at least some reporting that I've seen. Even as I was just preparing for my interview with Kit, I saw examples where people had said that. I have not done, and we here on the Sanchez Effect or RT have not done independent reporting on that, just to be clear. But where there's smoke, oftentimes you find fire. For what it's worth.
Well, there's always next time, and I do have the receipts. happy to chat anytime, dear Rick.
Thank
God bless
you,
my friend.
Thank you, Kit. You too, my friend. God bless you. Kit Clarenberg, wonderful journalist for the Gray Zone. Look him up, and we'll look forward to talking to him again next time. That's it for
us.
We're out of time. Thanks again, Kit. But look, hey, stick with us. Remember to follow us on my podcast. It's called Journalistically Speaking. I've got an interview with Doug McGregor, by the way, that I just did, that's going to be coming out, I think, either tonight or tomorrow, if you want to see it. He's also a fascinating guy, a real truth teller, and a military guy, by the way. He told me he's had 2 conversations with Donald Trump just within the last 48 hours. So, interesting. And you can talk to me on X, by the way, at Rick Sanchez TV. I'll be looking for you next time.